Peter Rosenberger. He's been a caregiver since the Cold War.
Welcome back to the show, For Caregivers About Caregivers, hosted by a caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger, bringing you 30 years of experience to help you stay strong and healthy as you take care of someone who is not. And if you want to be on the show, 800-688-9522, 800-688-9522. John, you know, when here we are on our 200th show.
This is our 200th show?
200th show.
Oh, interesting.
And when I looked at doing a show, a lot of people have been telling me, hey, you need to do a show, you need to do a show. So I asked around some advice from some folks, and I went to a friend of mine and I said, what do you think about this? And his words were, absolutely, do the show, and here's what you do, make them laugh. You, more than most, Peter, know how difficult the journey is of a caregiver. Make them laugh. You give them that permission and make them laugh. He's the only one that said that. He's the only one that could have said it. And he's with us today. It is Jeff Foxworthy. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm fine. I can't promise that I've made everybody laugh, but I've certainly...
You don't need to laugh. You know, you don't need to laugh all the time, because then that points to some type of mental instability. But
well, I think we're looking at that in the rearview mirror.
You do. You know, I think that's what my job is. I tell people laughter is the release valve that keeps the boiler from exploding. And if you don't laugh once in a while and you don't sing once in a while, everybody goes crazy. So,
well, you and I talked about that over the years, and you almost look at this like a... I don't want to dramatize it. How do you say that, John?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Okay. I don't want to make it sound more than it is, but you almost look at it as a sacred trust with your audience. You know that so many of them there are dealing with difficult things in their life. And you don't get mean-spirited. You don't get political. You just sit there and look at life and laugh at it and invite them to do it with you. And it gives them a respite from the troubles that they carry. And that's the way you've looked at comedy from what you've told me over the years.
That's pretty much it. I mean, it's, you know, to me, it was never laughing at somebody. It was laughing with. And I was lucky as a comedian because I found what worked for me early. And it was just that idea that, hey, if I think this, or if my wife says this, or if my family does this, just trusting that surely we're not the only ones. And so, you know, to me, the greatest compliment is for somebody to come backstage after the show and go, oh, my gosh, you've been in our house. You've been in our house. You know, because you know you're taking something that they've thought or they said or they've done, and you're kind of making them laugh at themselves there. And you know, when I really started looking at it different, for the last 30 years, I mean, my wife and I have been, you know, in charge of the fundraising for Duke's Children's Hospital, and just always kind of been in the middle of a lot of cancer charities and ministries or whatever. And when it really dawned on me was when I would walk into a hospital unannounced. Nobody knew I was coming, and I'd go in a room and I would see one of my books, or I would see one of my CDs or one of my DVDs, and you're like, oh, wow, this has value in here that I wasn't even thinking about when I made this. This is allowing somebody, you know, as you say, a respite from whatever they're going through for, you know, for however long, for 5 minutes or... Yeah, you know, or people come up to me and go, hey, you know, in my dad's last days, he and I sat there in the hospital and I read your book and we just sat there and laughed. And you're like, wow, this has value outside of simply just entertainment.
You know, you started out in comedy a long time ago. What's changed?
You know, I told a friend of mine a couple of months ago, I said, if I was starting over, I wouldn't know how to make a living because... So much of the money I made doing comedy was I did like 9 albums and, you know, 2 Showtime specials and 2 HBO specials and a blue collar tour. Well, nobody buys comedy records anymore. And, you know, my first 2 records sold almost 4 million copies apiece. And now if you have an album that sells 50,000 copies, it's a hit because nobody buys albums. They download stuff. You know, you can't sell a DVD because every night I'm on stage, every third or fourth person is sitting there recording you with their phone. And so you know, I'm on YouTube before I get back to the hotel. And so all of that has changed, but the way I approach it hasn't. You know, I still do the live shows. I still love that's out of everything I've got to do, whether it's, you know, TV or books or whatever. If you held a gun to my head and said you had to pick one, it would always be the live show. I still enjoy doing that.
So, you know, maybe comics can start dressing up like NASCAR drivers.
Maybe something like that. You know, it's,
well, I've watched you live numerous times, and you do enjoy yourself up there, and the audience knows that you enjoy it. You're not, it's not, nobody's nervous. Nobody's wondering, oh gosh, is he going to, you know, crash and burn, or is he going to go off the rails and say something, whatever. It is just a flawless jaunt into the fun things of the American family and the American life and life as we know it. And your audience knows that, and they trust you with it, and they trust that you're not going to take them into some dark place. And you're one of those few comedians that don't work out your emotional angst out on stage, you know?
Well, you know, and I think I'm one of the lucky ones because the guy you see on stage is me. It's not like I have to get into character to do it. And somebody was asking me in an interview, they said, so as the lights go down and you get ready to walk out there, what are you thinking? And I said, I'm thinking I'm about to go talk to some friends for a little while. You know, I mean, to me, we might as well be sitting on the couch in the living room just sitting there talking, you know, except I'm hogging the conversation. But I do view the audience as friends, you know. And so,
well,
yeah, I think I'm very, very blessed that way that, you know, you kind of found that thing that was comfortable. And there is a trust there. And so for me, it's important not to break that trust, you know, to honor that.
Well, and you've done that for a very, very long time. And I don't want to call you the elder statesman of comedy, but, you know, you kind of are.
Yeah. you know, in my mind, you know, you're still the new kid. I remember when I quit my job at IBM to start, and my hope was that I got to do it for a couple of years. I'm like, man, if I got to do this for a couple of years, wouldn't that be cool? And then I go back and get a regular job, but I always have a cool story about the 2 years I was a comedian. And, you know, two has now turned into 33, and nobody's caught on. So keep your head down and your mouth shut.
If it ain't broke. Hey, yeah. Listen, one of the things about caregivers is every one of us are going to deal with this stuff. You guys haven't been immune to this either. And you've watched your family, extended family, and so forth go through some things. Talk about your journey of seeing this and unfolding and now how you're more attuned to the needs of a caregiver that you weren't before, and how are you guys navigating through some of these things?
Well, you know, and I think it's a great point that you made earlier. Even if you're not a caregiver now, you're going to be. And I've always told people with my comedy, if you listen to an album or watch a special, it's kind of a snapshot of what was going on in my life at that point. And so now, like, as my wife and I have become empty nesters, you know, my joke is, you know, because in my mind I thought empty nesting, you know, I'm not going to wear pants the first year, you know, just...
I'm not wearing pants now.
But immediately you go from taking care of your kids to taking care of your parents. I think they pass each other in the driveway. But, you know, we dealt... My father-in-law was... seriously ill for 20 years, so I've watched this. You know, they live 1 mile away. I get down and get dirty with it. You know, I see what it cost. I see what it cost financially. I see what it cost, you know, emotionally. I see what it cost spiritually. And I really think, you know, spiritually, you have to change the way you think in order to be effective as a caregiver.
One of the things that I bring a lot of attention to is when a spouse is taking care of a parent, and a lot of times it's the wife taking care of it, and the husbands are watching sometimes helplessly as their wives are shouldering a horrible burden and struggling to wrap their minds. Has that entered into your life at all?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I sit there and watch my mother-in-law, you know, and you and I have talked about this. She she didn't take care of herself, she wouldn't go to the doctor. You know, she wouldn't, if she needed a new hearing aid, she wouldn't bring it up because she knew what it was going to cost and she knew what we were spending, you know, to take care of my father-in-law. And so to watch her not take care of herself and you know, then as secondary caregivers, you've got to step in and say, you know what, let me take over a while. You take a break. You take a break. Let's go get your eyes checked and your hearing aid fixed and give you a respite. You know, you go off for the weekend with my wife and I'll take care of him. And, you know, I think we're all capable of more than we're even aware of, but we're not capable of it endlessly. You know, you do need those breaks from it. And so, you know, for two decades, that's what we tried to give her, was a chance to take care of herself as well.
Did you watch as your wife struggled with this and as she dealt with her parents and just how do I even minister to her? How do I help her through this process as she's struggling to wrap her mind around this thing?
Absolutely. You know, and that's where, you know, it's just inbred into human nature to want to be selfish, to think about, I need, I need, I need. And so for me, it was changing the way I thought. It looking at my wife going, what is it that you need? Because you're going over there and you're bailing your mother out. You're taking people to the doctor. How can I help you? I'll make doctor trips for you, or I'll go make hospital visits. Or if you're going to go do it, then I'll make dinner while you're gone. I mean, it's, you know, it's like I found with dealing with kids with cancer. Everybody feels bad for the kid, but what I found in getting involved in it is it's not just the kid. It affects the entire family. You know, now you've got a mom that's sleeping night and day in a chair week after week, month after month in a hospital. You've got a dad that's had to take another job because mom's no longer working because she's at the hospital. Now you've got grandparents who are taking care of the siblings because dad's working two jobs and mom's not there. So, you know, just like cancer, when you're a caregiver, it doesn't just affect
it's a family sickness, isn't it?
It's a family sickness. It really is.
Mm. Well, you didn't identify yourself as a caregiver. Most of us, I didn't for the first 20 years of this thing. I had a wife with disabilities, and I just did it. And then I was doing this interview, and we're going to bring this into play because this was such a banner moment for me. But I was doing this interview with AARP, and they said a lot of people don't even self-identify as a caregiver. You know, how do you help somebody know if they're a caregiver? And I just, for whatever reason, I just lapsed into imitating you and said, if you, you know, and it was, and it really connected. And so you and I did this thing for AARP as a PSA a while back, a bunch of you might be a caregiver. And it gave people permission to laugh at this thing. And I thought we'd just riff on a few of these and I'll let you go because I know you're a busy guy and I appreciate you calling in for this special show here. But you want to do a couple of these with me?
Yeah, why not? Let's jump in.
All right, I'll start it off with, if you have more than six doctors sending you Christmas cards every year, you're probably a caregiver.
Okay. If, while at the grocery store, you're the one demanding a price check on suppositories, you might be a caregiver.
If your hospital bed has never hampered your love life.
Oh, no, I'm out. I'm out, guys. I'm done.
See, that's one of those little images that you really just don't want to burn into your brain.
Well, no use wasting a semi-private room. Hey, listen.
Yes, exactly. All right. If you have a professional carpet cleaner on retainer, you might be a caregiver.
If you've ever hooked up your dog to your wife's wheelchair just to see if it would work.
You know, here's the problem with this, Peter. It's like redneck jokes. As I go, you're not making this up. You've actually done that one, haven't you?
I have footage.
All right, then that makes you a caregiver with issues.
I
thought of a new one for you this morning. If your wife says, I have two left feet, and your first thought is to apologize.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
guys.
I'll go back to the store and get the right one.
I'll go get the other one. I'm so sorry.
Get the right one.
You see what he did there, John.
Oh. And that's why I have a radio show.
Yeah.
But well, listen, do the one that my favorite, the one that you busted me up with every time.
Okay. If anyone has ever seriously asked you, baby, have you seen my left leg? You might be kidding.
I just love that one. And I just love your heart. And thank you for encouraging me and being such a great mentor to me through this process. 200 shows, Jeff. And
you know what, Peter? Because I do remember when you know, you called me and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And here's the thing you never know is you never know who this has helped. And you're not going to know that while you're here. But it's just like with comedy. People need to know they're not crazy. People need to know, hey, it's okay if you have days you get frustrated or days you get resentful. It's okay. And, you know, one of the blessings God gives us is time. In that he's not bound by it, but he gives us 24-hour increments. So even when we have an off day, you get a reset button, and the next morning you're like, okay, I got a chance to do this better today. And I think caregivers need to give themselves that grace because it is a hard job, but it's a wonderful job, and you've been entrusted, you know, to do. I mean, when people say, what would Jesus do? That's what he would be doing. He'd be loving on people that need it.
That's what he did do.
Yeah, that's what he did.
And he took care, even from the cross, he took care of his mother. Even from the cross, he took care of his mother. He did do it. Jeff, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to call.
I'm so proud of you, and I'm proud of what you're doing, man. You're ministering to people that need it because, you know, caregivers are no less important than the person that they're taking care of. And I think we need to be reminded of that often. And so, man, just have me on for your 400th show. Will you do that?
I promise I will. All right, listen, Jeff Foxworthy, everybody. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the nation's number one show for the family caregiver. We're glad you're with us. 800-688-9522, and we'll be right back.